This is a restricted line. This is a special meeting presented by the Sedora Group of Wells Fargo Advisors for the benefit of their clients and guests. Any unauthorized party in this meeting or any unauthorized use of the information communicated in this meeting is subject to prosecution at the fullest extent of the law. Good afternoon. My name is Carmelli, and I'll be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to today's call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After Tom Sedorick's remarks, there will be a privacy-protected question-and-answer session. The conference operator will ask for your first name only. If you'd like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Thank you. Mr. Sedorick, you may begin your conference.
Thank you, Carmelli, and thank you, guests, and special thanks to the friends and family of our existing clients who joined us today. And another special thanks to Attorney J.P. Harris from Sheehan Finney. J.P. just got back from a big conference in Chicago, and he was very nice to squeeze us in today. Today's call will be in essentially three parts. First, a general perspective on cybersecurity issues, and one or two personal stories, including things you can do to remain safe. Second, the remarks and perspective of our special guest, Attorney J.P. Harris from Sheehan Finney. And third, ample time for your questions. We'll do our very best to answer everybody on anything, quite frankly, you care to ask about, including Wells Fargo, the bank, the current market environment, but primarily IT issues and cybersecurity. Please remember, we are not IT professionals nor members of law enforcement, but we'll do our best to answer your question. I guess one of the few good things about the Equifax breach was it actually took Wells Fargo off the cover of the paper for a couple days, but I want to offer a few remarks about Equifax and general comments before Attorney Harris gets into specifics. I think it's safe to assume we've all been compromised. Our family took action 4 or 5 years ago when Secretary of State Bill Gardner in Massachusetts disclosed my name, my Social Security number, and my date of birth to the web. We employed a service at that time to monitor our credit and any credit reports being filed on our behalf for the Sedorick family. We've not had any breaches, but we knew the information was out there and we wanted to take a precaution. The scope of the breaches is increasing dramatically, but we are not powerless. There are things you can and probably should do to keep your identity safe. Whole Foods Markets, the IRS, the Security Exchange Commission, and now Equifax have all announced security breaches in the past few months. An estimated 2 billion records worldwide in just the first half of 2017. We even believe those that are not online may have been compromised. So the question is, what can you do? Please, first of all, don't feel helpless, but engage in smart practices and protocols. I had one client tell me they felt quite helpless. They basically locked up their laptop, closed it up, and put it in a drawer and locked it, and never wanted to look at it again. I'm not sure that's going to be a very viable solution for most of us. One of the first things we recommend, and this is something that's well advertised, is don't fall prey to phishing email scams. They're getting very sophisticated today, and just don't click an email link from an unknown source or even a source you might question that looks viable but may not be. The other thing is obviously keep your updates, your software and security patches updated regularly, and establish a schedule for changing your online credentials every 2 to 3 months. We do this as a corporation, and I do it personally. Also, review your online accounts frequently. Once a week for me, look for unusual activity, things that you didn't authorize. That'll be a first clue to something that might be going wrong in the background. And consider locking down or freezing your credit data with Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. The Sedorics have. We don't plan on applying for credit anytime soon, and we've locked ours down. If you don't freeze your credit information, please establish a manner by which you monitor your credit history. I use a source called Credit Secure, which is an offshoot of American Express, and there are many others that can do this for you automatically, and you can do it yourself if you wish. We need to recognize that convenience is often in conflict with our security. We need to be wise about who has our information and how they might profit from it. I mean, Facebook and Google are a lot of fun, but what might we be sacrificing by using those services? And we need to be very mindful of when technology companies are data peddlers or data stewards. As stewards, our group works very hard to protect our clients. We have a list of resources relevant to this call on our site, thesedorickgroup.com, and we hope you visit it frequently. We put this this list of resources up yesterday afternoon, just so you know. And there was a link to it in that last email that went out to you yesterday afternoon. Now, let me pass the call over to Attorney J.P. Harris from Sheehan Finney. J.P. is a rising star in the New Hampshire legal community. We're honored to have him. He will be speaking to the Small Business Association of New England in November on protecting your business from data breaches. I'm sure we can secure an invitation to this event if you're interested, so let us know. And J.P., please take over for me, and thanks for joining us today.
Okay. Thank you, Tom, and thank you for the opportunity to speak to everyone today. As Tom started out with his first interaction with data breaches, and mine actually came when I was in college. I was applying for loans to go to law school, and my loans were denied because, as it turns out, a hospital on the coast had transposed another person's Social Security number so that it matched mine, and I had all these unpaid medical bills that really didn't relate to me. And it took many months to clear that up, and that was in the late 90s, which feels like a long time ago. I want to talk about a couple of things. One would be to address the fear that people think that things are out of their control, and we'll talk about that. Tom gave you some things that you do control, and I have a few more to add to that, and then I'd like to talk a little bit about where things are going. I have to give the disclaimer that I'm not providing any legal advice to anyone in this call. We're going to speak in some generalities, and if you have specific legal questions, please consult with your counsel. So let's talk a little bit about the things that feel out of your control. One thing that the Equifax breach demonstrated reinforced is that there are lots of repositories of your data that you don't have any real interaction with. Many people have their data compromised that never did any business with Equifax whatsoever, and yet it possessed lots of data about you. There are some estimates that there are up to 4,000 repositories of data out there that are similar to Equifax, maybe not quite as large, but there'll be entities that you have no knowledge of. What we've learned here at the firm in the last year or so in handling data breaches for our clients is that they come in all shapes and sizes, but importantly, they impact every sector. And what has been surprising to me is the number of our nonprofit clients that have actually been targets of data breaches. And if you think about it, it makes just as much sense. The data that our not-for-profit clients possess is just as valuable as the data possessed by our for-profit clients. And the not-for-profits frequently have far fewer resources to devote to security. So I just want to reinforce that your data is in a lot of places, and a lot of places that you don't exert a whole lot of control over. When Target was breached, the consumer started to move to other retailers and stop doing business with Target. And that somewhat infamously forced Target to settle class action lawsuits at a time when the class actions were failing all across the country. Plaintiffs were having a very difficult time actually succeeding with those class action suits, but Target was in the position where consumers had a choice and started shopping at other retailers, and therefore they agreed to a settlement that made quite a bit of news. But you don't consume products from Equifax. You are the product, frankly, and you don't have the same kind of flexibility with a lot of these repositories. The entities that you do business with, your auto lenders or your banks, those are the entities that have relationships with Equifax, and when they run your credit, they get data from these repositories. But you're the product, ultimately. And so it'll be very interesting to see perhaps the only real source of pressure that might come to bear on Equifax will be at the congressional level. The other thing, just to sort of reinforce, is that the testimony provided at Congress initially was that the error at Equifax that led to all this trouble was really fell to one employee. Now today there was some news that in fact Equifax had some notice of vulnerabilities months before, but the congressional testimony was that it was one employee, that they didn't get the message about the required security patch to the right person within the organization. So it just shows you sort of how fragile everything can be. In the future, companies are going to continue to try to differentiate themselves based on the security protocols that they implement, because they will bet that consumers will make choices with their pocketbooks based on whether they believe a company is safe or not. So That's the little bit of the dark clouds. So let's talk about the things that you do control. Tom had some good advice that one thing that you can certainly do without too much effort is just checking your account statements. This will tell you whether anyone has conducted any activity on your existing accounts. And what you want to look for there, in many cases, are the very small transactions. Oftentimes, when people purchase credit card information, they test the validity of the accounts with really small transactions that they're hoping will not be picked up by anybody. And then when they know the account numbers are valid, then they'll make the big purchase. You can also check your credit reports. This will tell you if anyone has opened any new accounts under your identity. But again, that only really tells you after the fact. One tip is to watch the credit reports for your children. It may seem somewhat nonsensical, but if, for example, if your tax return were compromised, your dependent Social Security numbers are on those tax returns, and sometimes hackers open up accounts in the names of your children. They have no credit histories of their own, and no one's really paying any attention to their accounts, but one tip is just to also get credit reports on your children. Tom mentioned the credit freeze, which is also a very good idea, particularly if you think you've been part of this recent Equifax breach. There are some pros and cons. Tom identified them for you, that if you do need credit, you'll have to jump through some more hoops and pay a small amount to thaw the freeze, if you will. But it's a good option to consider. Another recommendation is to keep your technology up to date. The ransomware attacks that occurred at the beginning part of the year were largely exacerbated because people didn't have up-to-date patches on their computers. And so make sure you stay up to date with the patches that come out. You might even consider shortening the lifespan of your technology, either your computers or your network technology at home, so that you can stay up to date with the more recent technological advances. And, you know, we preach record retention and data management to our corporate clients, but the same principles apply to individuals. You don't have to keep everything forever. And if you can trim down some of the personal information or transactional information that you keep about yourself, you just have less available for people to take. Another good defense for the ransomware attacks, of course, is to have a backup of your important information, so that if someone does take control of your computer, it's only going to be a minor inconvenience. You won't pay the ransom, and you'll just restore. Tom mentioned password management, and that's very important. I was on a panel with a security consultant about a year ago who recommended the password management applications like LastPass or 1Password. They help you by adding layers of security and also help you sort of keep track of the frequency with which you change your passwords. So those are the things that are in your control, and they're all relatively doable items. So let's talk a little bit about the future. From a legal perspective, if you were part of the Equifax breach, you are, whether you know it or not, probably a member of a class action that's pending somewhere in the United States. There's one that was filed in New Hampshire. They'll all get consolidated into one jurisdiction, likely. But don't hold out too much hope for those. As I mentioned, the class actions have historically had a very difficult time for lots of reasons. And ultimately, the recovery that trickles its way down to class members is usually quite small. And it'll take well over a year before anything really shakes out of that. The future, I think, will also hold some technological changes. Biometric information will certainly play more of a role. I think we'll probably find that credit decisions will become less dependent on Social Security numbers as time passes, and we'll rely more on biometric information and two-factor authentication, those kind of additional security measures. So one thing you can do is keep your eyes open for that, for entities that you interact with, financial institutions that you interact with that can promote those kind of advances. Two-factor authentication is becoming much more popular. The government's probably going to get much more involved in this. The Federal Trade Commission has been increasing its policing efforts with respect to companies that misrepresent the extent to which they employ security measures, and that will be fertile ground for enforcement. As I mentioned, I think companies in the marketplace are going to continue to try to differentiate themselves based on their security protocols. And the FTC is going to step up its enforcement when companies claim to have the most robust security possible and when they really don't. The notification laws will likely also change. That may be one significant upshot from the Equifax breach, is that the Equifax breach occurred at least 6 weeks before they provided any notice to anybody. And one reason for that is because we have this patchwork of notification laws across the states. My firm has sent out notices to 47 different states, and some states require certain headings in their letters. Some states require specific sentences. Some states require notifications to law enforcement while others don't. Some have different thresholds based on the number of affected individuals. It simply delays companies from providing notification to affected individuals because it takes time to figure out whether they're complying with the laws of North Carolina or Florida or California. So one thing that may happen will be the standardization at the federal level of these notification laws. And one thing that may happen through the court system is a little more success in the class action lawsuits. Only within the last few months has there been any real movement as courts have begun to recognize different damage theories, including the hassle and costs associated with monitoring one's credit and undoing credit transactions. A year ago, those damage theories were rejected, and now they're starting to gain a little more traction. And as painful as that is, that will force some changes at the corporate level as the risk increases on those types of claims. So all is not lost. I know at times it feels like your information is just floating out there in the ether and you don't have any real control over it. But there are certainly things you can do. And if there's one good thing of the Equifax breach, it's that it's drawn up more national attention on the issue, and there'll continue to be advances. There are entire segments of the economy that are based on improving security, and the marketplace will help drive some of that. So thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to you all today, and I look forward to your questions.
Yes, and Carmeli, please open this up now. And folks, please remember, and thank you, JP, did a wonderful job. Please remember, folks, that First Names Only to protect your security. I'll probably know who you are unless you're a guest of a current client, and we'll do our best to answer your questions. So please go ahead and open up the lines. Carmeli, thank you.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Again, it is star 1. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster.
And folks, while she's gathering up any folks that have questions, the link I mentioned is on our site, thesedorgroup.com. It's under a viewpoint tab, a thought leadership viewpoint tab, and the link is called Cybersecurity and Elder Fraud Resources. This was a companion piece we put together. I strongly recommend you read the piece by Ron Lieber, who has been on this Equifax breach from day one. Ron's a friend of ours. He's the personal finance writer at the New York Times. I spoke with him Sunday night, and he joked about the fact that he had to break the Equifax story at the same time his wife, Jody Cantor, was breaking the Harvey Weinstein story. So he's been a busy guy, but he's done a wonderful job for the public and his readers and keeping his readers informed of what's going on. The New York Times has been way out in front on this one. So any questions, please, we welcome them.
And there are no audio questions.
We have no questions. JP, you're going to go up easy.
JP, I have a question. This is Casey. Is there what are the chances that rules surrounding the repositories change in favor of the consumer? You know, why are there 4,000 repositories?
Well, yeah, interesting question. To stay sort of apolitical about it, we're in a climate of less regulation. And again, our markets, many consumer transactions depend upon the exchange of this kind of information. Why there are so many? It's because gathering data is itself a profitable enterprise, and that's not going to change. So I think what the regulatory scheme that might come down will come more from the misrepresentation of your security protocols from the FTC angle. There's been some institutionalization of standards at the national, at the governmental level. So the government is imposing certain standards on the way it protects its data. And we all know that, you know, the Office of Personnel Management itself was hacked and the IRS has been hacked. But those standards are, the business world is starting to look to those standards as sort of the default or the minimums. But that's not being imposed in the kind of formal regulatory way that I think your question suggests. I just think the market, you know, there's a lot of money to be made off being a data repository, and there's probably going to be very little done to curb that.
Okay. I have one other question, if there's no one else within the queue, but you mentioned password management services, and at least within my own, from my own perspective, I feel like, okay, it's a great idea, but then why wouldn't hackers be gunning for the password management services themselves? So I've always been hesitant or skeptical of registering with any of them or utilizing them.
Yeah. I think the argument for them is that they help secure a more direct connection and an ever-changing connection between you and you know, the entity on the other end, whoever you're doing business with. So they are, in theory, much harder to hack. Again, it's another example of ultimately your identity, what connects you to these passwords is housed somewhere. It's the bits and bytes live somewhere. I think that the security experts right now are feeling like a lot of the hacking is happening in between the transactions, people fitting themselves in between, you know, your checking out on a website and actually getting your confirmation and so forth. And they feel like at least giving you more protection as you sign into these sites is better than the alternative.
Okay.
I was at a conference where the one thing that all the security experts say keep them awake at night is the social engineering hacks, where and these might lead to phishing emails, but they might also be ways where people will reconstruct passwords. But the gathering information on individuals based on what they post online and their sort of digital footprint helps people guess or construct phishing emails that look perfectly legitimate and result in the sort of voluntary disclosure of personal information. The security officials lose sleep over these because there isn't really a technological way to protect ourselves from that. And as the fishers get more sophisticated, it's going to be more difficult to separate, you know, reality from fiction. I think the security folks all feel like the only thing they can do is sort of educate consumers and get them to be more attentive, but that doesn't make the techies feel all that comfortable. So we all have to be vigilant. Tom mentioned this about emails that come unsolicited or emails that just seem odd, emails that request the transmittal of personal information via email. I mean, all these companies tell you we'll never ask you for that kind of information online, but it happens frequently that people share that information because they believe they're sending it to a credible source.
And one last chance, folks, if anybody has any questions, Carmelli, is there anybody in the queue?
There are no questions at this time.
Well, you did a great job, JP. Thank you, Casey, my co-pilot. I want to thank you again for joining us today. We are stewards. We always welcome your questions and calls and even emails, although if it's a detailed question, it probably is best done by phone rather than email. Please remember, we do have links and resources available to you on our site. Ron Lieber's series of articles is there, a number of federal links, as well as some of the resources from Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo, for what it's worth, I've been told, spends $100 million a month on cyber issues and security. So we're in the thick of it. Obviously, no institution's perfect, but I think they've done a pretty good job thus far. And we hope that you all keep safe online. And if we can do anything to help you, I hope you won't hesitate to give us a call. So thanks again for joining us today, and thank you, JP, and thank you all.
This does conclude today's conference call. You may now disconnect.